Okay, good evening. We are going to be learning Parshas Veschanon. And to the best of my knowledge, I don't know if we have any Parsha classes on Veschanon. And what we're going to do today, I'm going to share with you from two separate essays from Rav Avigdor Nevenzahl, who's a very esteemed rabbi who lives in Yerushalayim. He's a student from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And we're going to discuss the topics of Dvarim, Parshas Dvarim, and then getting into a certain section up to in this Parsha Veschanon, and we're going to, God willing, come up with some really great lessons over here. So let's begin with the first two sources. That's the beginning of the part of the book of Dvarim. Eila hadvarim asher diber Moshe el kol Yisrael be'ever hayarden. These are the words that Moshe addressed to all the Jewish people on the other side of the Arctic. Remember, Moshe started his final farewell speech to the Jewish people on Rosh Chodesh Shvat in the year 2488. Rosh Chodesh Shvat. He will die 37 days later. So we're right at the end over here. And he's speaking El Kol Yisrael to all the Jewish people. And what kind of words is he saying? So let's take a look at the second source from the Targum Yonasan. It says, Lein Piskome Ochachusa. These are the words of admonition, words of rebuke. Now, what I want to do is go back onto the top, and you'll see there's 10 points, 10 topics, and to go through them briefly, and to ask a few questions, and then to work our way through this to see what really is going on over it. At surface level, we're dealing with words of admonition to the entire Jewish people. And if you look in the topics, after the introductory words, so the first topic in Sefer Dvarim, is not, and Moshe is reviewing everything now. He's reviewing their 40 years together. So he starts with a command that Hashem tells him at Sinai, it's time to leave, it's time to go to the land of Israel. Good. The next topic he brings up is the topic of that there should be appointed judges. And they appoint judges. And the rebuke over there, what's the rebuke? Remember, Moshe said, it's too hard for me to take care of all these people by myself, the troublemakers. This was on the foothills of the story where the Jews were complaining they wanted meat. And Moshe said, it's too hard for me to do this by myself. So Hashem said, okay, you can appoint judges. And the people were happy with that. And the rebuke is, you should not have been happy. You should have been wanted to get the Torah directly from Moshe and not to have other people be judging you with that. You can get from the biggest rabbi. Why do you want smaller rabbis? Why didn't you want more spirituality? So that's going over that story, and that's a form of rebuke. That's fine. The next story following that is the sin of the spies. We're going to great detail. Fine. Then there's a skip of 38 years. We get to the end of Sefer Dvarim, topic 4, 5, 6, 7, 4, 5, 6. The end of, we're told that, really should be the end, yeah. Well, I should fix this up. I should take out the words end of Dvarim. I didn't fix it up. It should say, the fourth one is from chapter 2, 1 to 30, describing their circling around Edom, Moab, and Ammon, where they couldn't go through them. They had to circle around them. The next topic is the conquest of the lands of Sihon and Og. It's all reviewing what's happening. The next is the tribes of Gad and Reuven wanting to have land on the east bank. And the condition that Moshe made with them is reviewed. And that takes us through Parshas Dvarim. That's the main topics in Parshas Dvarim. Okay, we begin this week's Parsha continuing this speech. The seventh topic is Moshe's prayers to enter the land of Canaan. Eretz Yisrael. He davens 515 prayers. Hashem says, no, stop, you're not going to go. The next chapter is a lengthy discussion which basically tells us not to get involved in idolatry. And that basically ends the words of rebuke up to this point. The next topic is that Moshe designates the three cities of refuge, as Hashem had already commanded him to do this. And as you see that he was commanded in Parshas Maaseh, Matos and Maaseh before, Hashem commanded to separate three cities on the east bank, and then later there'll be three cities on the west bank. Okay? So we're told that he finally did it. So I guess a little break in the speech. A break in the speech to the Jews. And now, okay, he designates three cities to be the cities of refuge. So let's jump down to source number three for a minute, below that. And we're told like this. It says, Uz Yavdil. Then Moshe separated those cities. Rashi just gave you the title of the Rashi. Uz Yavdil. Then he separated. So Rashi says, Nosan Lev Lios Chared L'davar Shiavdilem. So Moshe put his attention to be zealous to this matter to set the cities apart. And then Rashi asks a question, Vafel Vishena Koltos, but these three don't work until when? They're not effective until you do three on the other side of the Jordan River. So why did he bother setting them up? So it says, Moshe said, I have a chance to do a mitzvah, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do what I can. So there it says, Oz Yavdil. Then Moshe separated it. So this is interesting. There's a few questions we can ask on this. The simplest question is, so it seems he really likes to do mitzvahs. So why didn't he separate the cities in Sefer Bamidbar when Hashem commanded him about it? Right away. He could have separated the cities.
But now he knows that he's going to die soon.
But he likes to do mitzvahs right away, doesn't he? So right when you're commanded. Either way, they're not going to be working now. But he wants to do the mitzvah.
But now he knew that maybe after some time, they're also going to go to the other side and to build it. So it's not very far from the next three.
No, but as soon as Hashem told him in Sefer Bamidbar,
he could have done it.
You have to have three cities. So Moshe should have done it right then and there. What was he waiting for? He always is quick to do mitzvahs. But the more important, and then after he separates those three cities, the final topic, where we have it a little bit later on, source four, V'zos HaTorah, you know this pasuk, Asher Samosha Lifnei B'nei Yisrael. But it doesn't finish off the way you sing it in shul. This is the teaching that Moshe set before. This is why it becomes a new topic. Which we're not going to go further than that. It's a new topic. But it's a little interesting. Why does it have to say Zos HaTorah Asher Samosha Lifnei B'nei Yisrael? Don't we know he's talking to Jews the whole time? Look back at source one. Eilat Varma Sher Diber Moshe Kol Yisrael. This is what Moshe said to all the Jews. So who else has been talking to in the middle? Now we're just starting Zos Hatar Sher Samosha Lifnei B'nei Yisrael. We've already been talking to B'nei Yisrael. There's nobody else he's been talking to. So why he got to say Lifnei B'nei Yisrael? Okay. Now, what are the main questions we need to discuss is, okay, Moshe is going over the history of the Jews. So, has he listed all the events that happened in this period of time, in the first six points in Parshas Dvar? Right? Hashem tells us to leave Mount Sinai. He appoints judge, sin and spies, circling around at him, conquests the Sichon and Og. The deal he makes with the tribes. That's it? So, what is Moshe's, like, what's he basing why did he choose these events? Why didn't he pick other events? Like, how about giving the Torah at Sinai, for example, which was the first one? Like, if we're dealing with chronological events, well, we're missing a lot of the chronology. What stories are missing? Giving the Torah at Sinai. What else is missing? We're talking about rebuke. What else is missing?
Golden calf.
Golden calf. Where's the golden calf? Where's the sin with the Moabite women in Shittim? How about the story of Korach? Right. And if you want to say, well, they only picked the most important events, well, I don't know. There's a lot of important ones. They're plenty important as well. Right. So, like, what's the rhyme or reason over here that he's picked some and not the others? Good question. Also, generally speaking, even though the Torah does not go in a specific order, and sometimes it goes from one place to the other, but Talmud says in Sefer Dvarim, every story has to be connected one to the other. So after Moshe is going through all these events and telling us about his prayers for land, then and we shouldn't stumble to idol worship, then it says, Oz, then Yavdil, then Moshe separated the cities. As if there's a connection between what he said up to now until this point. You know, for example, we have the Jews saw the Egyptians get killed at the Sea of Reeds. Oz Yashir. Then the Jews sang. Oh, very good connection. People got wiped out. Then the Jewish people sank. So usually when you have the Oz, then it's following up upon something.
Yeah, something has to be before.
So, but what's the follow up over here? Moshe's just telling us some Musar, giving rebuke for certain events, which you don't know why these certain events. And he decides, okay, he wants, and then he designates three cities of refuge. So what's the connection? What's his connection? City of refuge. Us, then, as if now is the time. And it could be a little bit later, earlier. Like, what's it doing over here? Okay, and finally this other question by source 4 that we mentioned already. Vizol Satar, Shemosh Lufnei B'nai Yisrael, in front of all the Jewish people. Well, we already know he's talking to all the Jewish people. So this is what makes Sefer Dvarim so hard. Like, what's the rhyme and reason over here? Now, many, many of the early rabbis have given a discussion on these issues. But I want to share with Rabbi what Rabbi Nevenzahl talks about, because it's a very unique approach. And there's a message there that we would not have had understood otherwise. And he chooses a Rashi to start with this. Let's take a look in Source 5 and Source 6. Okay, we're going back in Sefer Dvarim. Okay. And we're talking about how Moshe's going over the stories. And we're dealing with the conditions that he's speaking to the tribes of Gad and Reuven. Okay, this is going back to that story in Source 5. And he says, and atzav eschem ba'eis ahi, at that time I commanded you, le'mor seg, Hashem elokeichem nasam alchem es haaretz, Hashem your Lord has given you the land, azos l'rishta, chalutzim tavoru, you shall go in the front lines, lifnei achicha b'nei Yisrael, kol b'nei choyo, you're going to be at the head. That was one of the deals. You have to lead them into battle. Okay, so on these words, I bolded the Hebrew word, atzav eschem, I charged you. So what question is bothering Rashi? Well, Rashi has to comment. So Rashi says in Source 6, on the words, I am commanding you, livnei Reuven ubnei God hoya medaber, to the families of children of Reuven and God, he was speaking. Now, you have to always be careful. Don't be a slave to the English translation, because I just picked a random English translation. English translation is not necessarily accurately translating what Rashi says. Again, what does Rashi say? Atzavas, I'm commanding you, B'nei Reuven, B'nei God, Hoya Medaber. He was speaking. To them he was speaking. The English says a little different. He says, he now addresses himself to the sons of Reuven, the sons of God. You see how the English is not accurately translating the Hebrew? But in Hebrew, Rashi didn't say now. Now, why is Rashi telling us this? So the simple pshat in Rashi is that since he's talking to all the Jews, so you might think when he says, and I commanded you, he's still talking to all the Jews. So he's saying, Vatzav Aschem, I'm talking, and I commanded you. Now, if I say not all the Jews, he didn't command all the Jews to lead the troops into battle. But he's saying, I command you, is referring to Reuven and Gad at that time. That's the simple meaning that he's saying over there. So in this little section, he's speaking to them. So therefore, Rashi, it says, Vatzav Aschem. He's saying, well, don't make a mistake and think I'm commanding all of you right now. He's saying, and I commanded you, the tribes of Reuven and Gad. But, and this is the idea that Rav Nevenzahl is going to say now. And I'm going to give you the answer now, and we'll develop it all. He's suggesting that this whole discussion from the beginning of Sefer Dvarim through now, really, the entire Tochacha is primarily being said to B'nai Reuven and B'nai Gad. From the beginning of the Sefer, until he separates the city of refuge, it is really his primary intention is to rebuke the children of Gad and Reuven. And he had them singled out. And that's what Rashi is did not say over here, did not say, as the English would suggest, to B'nai Reuven and Gad, Diber Ata, he was talking now. But that's exactly what the English says. That's exactly what the English says, what Rashi didn't say. He now addresses himself to them. Rashi didn't say that. What did Rashi say? He says, Hoya Medaber. What does Hoya Medaber mean? How do you translate that, Yaakov?
He was speaking.
He was speaking, meaning the whole time.
Yeah. Not now.
The whole time. Okay. Why is he talking to them? We're going to see in a minute. Now, what does that mean? Was he talking to all the Jews? Yes. But Rashi said, of course he assembled all the Jews. All 12 tribes were there. But what Rashi is revealing over here is that he really was talking to B'nai Gad and Reuven. That's what we had in mind. You know, sometimes...
Talk to everybody.
Sometimes, I don't do that anymore, but sometimes when a rabbi wants to rebuke a specific person in the shul, so what'll he do?
Oh yeah, he'll call everybody.
He'll from the pulpit, use the royal you, so he's talking to the whole shul.
Yeah.
But he really has this one guy in mind. But he doesn't want to tell the guy right to his face, so it just becomes the topic of the drush.
Right.
You know, let's say he knows this guy doesn't give tzedakah. So he's going to tell the whole shul you have to give tzedakah. Right? But really, the rabbi really, even though he spoke to the whole shul, but he has this guy in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Rashi's saying. What Rashi is saying is that to B'nai Gad and Reuven, he is Hoyamidaber. He was speaking. You can't say he was only speaking to them, because in the beginning it said he spoke to all the Jews. But he was speaking to all the Jews with the focus that he was really focused on B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven.
Why especially only them?
I'm sorry?
Why especially only them?
That's what we're going to talk about. That's what we got to talk about now. That's going to be the rest of the class now.
Because they wanted that to stay.
Okay, we'll have to see what's going on. Okay, I understand. But we have to unpack this properly. Well, you know, that same example that I gave with the rabbi in the shul, so what usually happens when the rabbi's finished with that type of sermon? Right? He has that guy in mind who doesn't give tzedakah. And the rabbi talks about the virtue of tzedakah. So invariably what happens during the kiddush, that guy comes to the rabbi and says, Rabbi, you really gave a good speech. All those people really needed to hear that. It's a great speech. I hope everybody else heard it. So guess what? Guess what? This little joke is the whole rest of the class. Is the whole rest of the class. So now what we got to do is go back to the end of Sefer Bamidbar and play it back. and see what's going on. And we'll go over that story when B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven came to Moshe. And let's go with the discussion, and let's see where things ended off. Okay, we'll briefly summarize it with source 7 and source 8, and then a couple more. Okay, we know the story, that the tribes of Gad and Reuven had a lot of flocks, had a lot of cattle. Okay, and the land that they just conquered from Sihon and Og on the east bank, it's a lot of good, fertile pasture land. So what did they do? Source 7. Vayikshu elav, they come to Moshe, Vayomer, they said, Gidros tzon nivne lemikneinu. Sheepfolds for our flocks. Nivne lemikneinu. We're going to build for our sheep. Po. Va'arim letapenu. And towns for our children. Okay, we want to settle here. We want to build. Now what did he say first? Sheepfolds for our flocks, and then towns for our children. Then Moshe lets them have it. What are you doing? Are you going to try causing people to lose heart? And what's going on? Don't you remember the story of the spies? When the spies came back and said we couldn't conquer the land, and melted the hearts of the Jewish people. Are you going and doing the same sin? Now you're not going to want to go, and everyone's going to be afraid to go? So to which they said, okay. So they said, listen, we'll do this. We'll do this way. We're going to have our,
children.
We're going to build for the flocks and then for our children. And they said, we'll go out first to battle. We'll go out first to battle. So Moshe responds, and in the middle of store 7, what does Moshe say? Benu lechem orim letapchem. So he says, build towns for your children and sheepfolds for your flocks, but do what you have promised. What did Moshe say different than what they suggested? If you look carefully, what was the order they said it in? What was the order that Moshe said it in? You see the difference over there. They mentioned their sheep first.
Yeah, the business first.
And then they mentioned the children second. Moshe subtly says, you'll build for the children first and then for the sheep. And right, and then later on, when they review what Moshe said to them, we're still in source 7, they hopped what Moshe said, and they say, okay, tapenu. Our children, our wives, then he mentions our flocks.
Yeah.
And all our livestock will stay behind in the towns of Gilad. So they finally got the message. Okay. And they agreed that they'll go first into battle. So it seems that everything was okay. Moshe rebuked them. They listened to the rebuke. And they followed. And they did. And when the Jews went into the land of Canaan, they led, and they even did more than what Moshe asked. They led the troops into battle for 7 years, and then they even stayed another 7 years till everybody was settled. And then they went back to went to the east bank. Rashi in source 8 brings down from the Medrash, and he says like this. He says, when it says we'll build sheepfolds for our cattle here, Rashi says, they paid more regard to their property than to their sons and daughters because they mentioned their cattle before their children. And Moshe said to them, he said, if you look in the Hebrew, Asu ha'ikar ikar v'hatofel tofel. Not the way you say. Make the chief thing, and what's subordinate, subordinate. First build cities for your little ones, and afterwards enclosures for your flocks. He's saying, you got it wrong. Okay. So they seem to fix it up. Now, there's a fascinating Shiloh. Let's just digress for a moment. It's not really a digression. So Nebenzahl once mentioned a Shiloh that was asked to his Rebbe. Okay. Here's the following Shiloh. We know if you have two fruits brought in front of you, and they're not, neither one's from the seven species, and you're going to only make one bracha on both fruits, borei pre'etz. And if you don't have one from the shivas minim, and let's say they're both whole, so which one do you make the bracha on? You're going to pick one up and make the bracha on. Which one do you make the bracha on?
Both the heads.
They're both in eights, but you have to make the bracha. You have to take one fruit. You can't eat two fruits at a time. You got to make the bracha on one fruit, and then the other fruit will be go along with it. So there, the rule is the one that's chaviv, the one that you like more. So if let's say you have an apple and a banana, and you read not a banana, it's an adama. You have an apple and an orange, and you really love apples. You love them. So then you make a apples. If you, let's say you really love apples, but right now you're really in the mood for an orange. Yeah. Normally you would take an apple all the time. Well, then you'll make a bracha on the orange.
What do you want to eat at that time?
Okay. So now, Rav Nevensol asked Rav Auerbach the fine question. What would be the din if you have two fruits in front of you? One you really like better. You really like better. The other one you don't like as much. But you know that the other one is healthier and has much more vitamins. Which one should you say the bracha on first? Isn't that great, Shaila? So Rav Auerbach said that the one that's healthier, you make the bracha on first. Even though you really don't like it as much, but you make a bracha on the healthier ones. I don't know which fruits, which one's a healthier fruit. You know, they're, I guess, I don't know. But whatever.
How do you know?
Well, you know, whatever. Let's say you need a lot more vitamin C. So you're going to take the orange. You like apples, but the doctor said, you know, you need to increase your vitamin C. It's okay. So I'll take the orange because the orange now is going to make me healthier than the apple. So you make a bracha on the orange. That was the answer he gave. So Nevensol says, I think a source to what his Rebbe said is from this week's Parsha. From this Parsha we're talking about. Because what did the tribes say first? Let's make for our sheep and then for our children. Right? Then Moshe said, you got it wrong. It should be your children and then your sheep. And then they fixed it up themselves. So let's think about this. What really, why did they say their sheep first? Because really, the sheep represented lots of wealth. So at the initial time they said it, they seemed to care more about their sheep than their children. Right? Because why would they want to take care of their sheep before their children? Well, parnasa is important.
To sustain them.
And parnasa is important for them. But then when Moshe corrected them, they understood, but who's really the more important one? The children. So therefore, even though they're worried about parnasa, but ultimately there's something's much better than that. So he feels that could be the same idea as well. So let's try to understand what was going on over here. And what are Chazal telling us that they made? And if you look, also, you figure at the end of the day, you figure, okay, they were good. They maybe Moshe misunderstood them, or even though Moshe rebuked them, they accept the rebuke and they did teshuva. And they did everything Moshe told them to do. And they did. They 100%. They didn't renege on the deal at all. So you figured it should be okay.
Yeah.
Not so. You look in the Sefer Mishlei, Source 9, and Rashi brings from Chazal very incriminating statements against these tribes. It says, Nachala mevohelet barishona, an estate acquired in haste at the beginning, vachrisat lo tavarach, will not be blessed in the end. And Rashi brings down from Chazal, what does this mean? I didn't have it in English. So I'm just going to write, I'll say the Hebrew and I'll translate it. I'm sorry. Shenival, what does it mean? An estate acquired in haste. Shenival lemaher valitol tchila. They're in a hurry to grab right away, like the descendants of Gad and Reuven. Shemir alitochom, they want to get their portion right away on the other side of the Jordan River. And they spoke bibahala in haste. Because they said, let's build sheep folds for our sheep. and then cities for our children, and now in the bold, Asa Esa Ikar Tafel, they made the main thing supplementary. The children are the main thing, they made them supplementary. Shektimo Tzanul Adabam, they put the sheep in front of the children. That's in haste. And the end will not be blessed, Rashi says, because they went into exile 8 years before the 10 tribes went into exile. They're the first one to be exiled. Okay, and it proves with the years and all that. So we see that this was really terrible, even after the tshuva and everything. They still were punished for this. And the question is, why? What's going on over here? And what the rabbis mean when they said they made the Ikar Tafel and the Tafel Ikar, the main thing they made supplementary, and the supplementary they made the main thing. It's not just the sheep and the children. Yes, that became the upshot of that. That's true. But you have to understand what was their intentions? Why didn't they want to go into the land of Israel? Everyone's going to the land of Israel. So we know the tribe of Reuven. Reuven, we know, was very meticulous to not steal. Very careful. How do we know that? As a child, we know the story when he brought the jasmine flowers to his mother. Chazal tell us he was careful to take it from Hefker that was ownerless because he didn't want to steal. And he realized that he has, so he's very careful not to want to steal. Now, he's got lots of cattle, lots of sheep. They're going into Eretz Yisrael. It's not a huge land. There's not lots of pasture land. As a matter of fact, there, even when Yeshua, after Yeshua came in, he made a bunch of decrees. He said we shouldn't raise sheep in the land of Israel because it's going to devour what little land there is. So they figured, listen, what are we going to do? We got lots of sheep. Hashem gave us a lot of sheep. If Hashem gave us a lot of sheep, we got to do something with the sheep. But we go into the land of Israel, it's not going to work. So therefore, either our sheep are going to graze in other people's lands, or if they don't, they're going to die. Hashem didn't give us all these sheep. We have more sheep than everybody else, not to die. So let's be proactive over here. We just conquered this land on the East Bank. So we'll go and we'll have our sheep for all this. And that way, it'll be a good thing. And more than that, you know, they understood that everything has to have its tikkun in the world. Everything needs a tikkun. The sheep need a tikkun. And these lands we just conquered from the Goyim, and those lands need a tikkun. So we'll be the ones to make the tikkun, and we will be able to make sure that the sheep are living properly, and everything will be fine. And Shalom al Yisrael. We're not going to be promising anybody.
But they knew that God's message is that all have to go to Israel.
Well, they said to go to Israel, but this is pretty close.
And I built this on the other side and left the sheep there to graze.
Well, but someone's got to watch him. You have to live with your sheep.
No, but it's still, here's the border.
No, no, that border, that's not the kind that you just go cross the Jordan River. It's like, you need lots of land. You have to live. You have to live with the sheep. You got to live with your animals. You know, you don't make a farm and you live miles away.
You build a farmhouse right here and the raising coons right there.
And you're talking about a whole shevet. It's not just one man. It's a tribe. Tribe has to live in a lot of land. If it was one person, you could do that. You're talking about tens of thousands of people. They take up a lot of space. And their sheep take up a lot of space. You need a lot of land all over. Alright? So, and this was an important thing. This was an important thing. So they felt this was a critical thing.
Okay, I have a question.
So, yeah?
So, how they came to know that they will not be able to sustain themselves on the other side of the on the west side of the...
Well, the spies did bring back a report that told them about the land, and I'm sure they told them some details, how big the land was. It wasn't such a big land. The spies went up and down the land. When they gave the report, they had an idea of what kind of land it was. Right. So therefore, they're saying the best solution is we're going to do this, and this will work out good for everybody. So here's where this is a more subtle mistake over here. It wasn't people who didn't like the Jewish people, because you see that when Moshe said you're going to make everybody scared, so okay, we'll be the first ones to go. It wasn't that they were afraid to go in battle. They felt this will be the best place for them to be. But the point being, we have to realize that you have to know how to prioritize your spiritual goals in life. That yes, you're right. Having sheep, having property that Hashem gave you, you have a responsibility. You have to use it the way Hashem wants you to use it. And you don't want to steal from other people. And that is an important point.
Isn't that once again showing a lack of faith in Hashem?
Oh, that's not a bad point you raise over there. But let's take it further. What should have been their biggest priority?
Go to Israel.
Your children. Your children. And he has a great line. It's a little bit later on, but I might as well quote it now. Where is it? I had it somewhere. Where is it? 14. It's a great line. I'll read it in Hebrew. And then he says, Hatzon hu chashuv, ach chashuv yoter hu baal hatzon. Sheep may be important, but what's more important is the owner of the sheep. That's an incredible message. In other words, so let's say, for example, a person, is there a mitzvah to make a parnasa for your family? Yes. It is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to go to work, make a parnasa, no question about it. Okay, so let's say you're in Toronto and you're struggling. You're struggling with parnasa. You have a wife, kids, bills to pay. I get this great job offer. Great job offer in Sault Ste. Marie. $200,000 a year. You know, wow. So you grab it, right? Because parnasa, I have to take care of my wife and kids. True. That's a mitzvah, and it's an important thing. But what about their education? What about the children's education? What about your Yiddishkeit? Which one's more important? Which one's the ikar and which is the tafel? I'm not saying parnasa isn't important. You have to have a parnasa. It's no question you have to have parnasa. But now you're talking about parnasa, physical welfare, and spiritual welfare. How is your family going to survive spiritually in Sault Ste. Marie? Before the internet. Okay, it wouldn't make a difference even with the internet. All right, I understand there's Chabad Shluchim that go to far-fetched places in the world. Okay, it's Mesiris Nefesh, but you know they have all kinds of methods to try to keep up in educating their children. But I'm talking about a regular person. So you've got to realize there's priorities and there's priorities. Right? And you have to understand that yes, your sheep is a part of taking care of them and making part of us is part of your Avodas Hashem. But there may be more important parts of Avodas Hashem. And therefore, one, like you said, what about Bitachon? They could have said like this. Listen, I got two issues here. Parnasa and children. So they should have said, well, you know what? There's nothing to discuss. The children are first. We cannot compromise on this. Okay, we've got a big problem. Parnasa. It's a big problem. So maybe ask Hashem that he should do a miracle for them or something in the land of Israel. You know, say to them, says that we got sheep. Hashem, please make sure that we've got some place to graze these sheep. Deal with the problem when they're there. And what if they're going to say, sorry, we don't have any land. You just have to slaughter all the sheep. Slaughter all the sheep. Become a farmer. So that's what it means. They made the Iker Tufel and the Tufel Iker. It means not that either one wasn't important. It didn't say they chose something bad instead of something good. They were both good things. It's a good thing to worry about your family's parnos. It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah in a way that's honest and clean, and you're not going to steal from people. That's very important. But it's also very important that your family has to get the best spiritual upbringing possible. So now the key is to know which one is the more important one. And the other one will have to be sacrificed. So what happened was, so now, and that's, and it comes out with the slip of the tongue. When you feel that the parnas is the bigger issue, so when you open up your mouth, what do you say? We have to make sheepfolds for the sheep and cities for our children. How come it came out that way? Why didn't your kids come out first?
Because that was in their mind.
But of course my kids are important. They're important, but how important? So that's why you could have people who really can spend, you know, inordinate amount of time with their parnasa. And the reason is, they'll say, what do you mean? I'm doing it for the kids. Okay, but how come you're not spending any time with the kids? What's the ikker? That you could provide food for the kids or to be a father to the kids? I'm not minimizing either one. They're both important. But if push comes to shove, what's more important? Is it better that you and the children are living in poverty, but you're there for your kids? Or you're living in wealth and you're not there for your kids. So that rate, you know, that's a tricky thing that you could, you know, you could see how a person could make a mistake. So what do you mean I'm doing it for the kids? What do you mean I'm killing myself so my kids will get the best of everything? And they are getting the best of everything, but they're losing something. They're losing their father. Or they're losing their mother. And to realize which one is the bigger priority. And that's, Mamish, a real big test in this generation now. In the old times, there was only one income family. The father went out to work and the mother took care of the family. Now you got both parents are working and the nanny's raising the kids or the daycare's raising the kids, which is definitely not an optimal thing. And people are saying, well, you know, the parnassah is important. Well, based on what we're learning here, no, you'd have to figure a way that the children are well taken care of by the family, by the parents, and the parnasa, you'll just have to get a job that's not as good. But how are we going to take care of them? Well, you'll tell them the Hashem for that. And if you, it's better that you're going to be a little hungrier, and you're living in an apartment and not in a house, or whatever, but at least you're a full-time parent, or it's one full-time parent, who's taking care of the children. Now that's, in other words, it's not what we're saying, I want to be bad and not be good. It's, I want to be good. I want to be as good as I can in everything. But the question is, what's good, what's your first priority of being good? And that's the mistake in the wrong priorities. Yes?
So there was a reason for Reuben to ask, that okay, he did not want to steal, he used to not like, but what was the reason for God to ask? I know that they had sheep and all, that was a different thing. But Reuben's priority was he did not want to go his sheep to go.
Well, he also had a lot. No, he had a lot of flocks also. He
yeah, could, that I understand.
It could very well have been part of, and he may have felt the same way. Could be he felt the same way. With Reuven, we have historical proof to that. Right. But you could feel that God just went along with that as well. That's not a problem. Right. Yeah.
So everybody knew that when they left Egypt, that the main priority was to go to.
We're going to go to the land of Israel.
The land of Israel. They also knew that the tribe of Manasseh left early and they perished in the valley, half tribe.
Yes.
So then why did they request to stay back then in the, on the east side, the Gad and Reuben?
No, Manasseh was a different story. Manasseh felt that the time to leave Egypt had come. So they left early because they wanted to go to the land of Israel. But it was too soon to go, so they got killed. That's a different story. That's a different story. But not, the Bnei Ephraim who went early, right? You're talking about the ones who left Egypt early. Well, they wanted very badly to go to Israel, but Hashem said it's not the time. So if it's not the time, you don't go. But now it is the time. It's the time to go to Israel, and they should have wanted to go. Now you have to realize how much they were missing. So let's take a look at a few examples. Source 11, for example. You know, what happened was, at the end of Sefer Yeshua, and now everybody had all their land. And now the Bnei Gad and Reuven, they're finally making their leave of Yeshua. And they're going home. They cross the Jordan River. And then there's a whole story I want to get into it. But right at the right on the east bank, they build this huge altar. Huge altar. And when the Jews on the west bank, what's going on? They're making their own Beis HaMikdash. They're making their own place of worship. And they send Pinchas to go check it out. And look what Pinchas says to them in Source 11. Va'ach im tmeya eretz achuzeschem ivru lochem el eretz achuz Hashem. And if it is because the land of your holding is unclean, cross over into the land of the Lord's own holding. In other words, so what are you building this mizbech for? You know, you can't bring korbanos outside of Shiloh or Jerusalem. And what you don't like it where you're at? Well, then why don't you come back? And he calls an eretz tmeya, an unholy land. And let's take a look in Source 12. It says that Eretz Canaan is holier than Aver HaYarden, than the East Bank. Eretz Canaan is suitable for holiness, while Aver HaYarden is not suitable for holiness. There's an opinion in Meseches Bikurim that tells us, Rabbi Yosef says, you know, Bikurim, the first fruits, he says, your first fruits from the East Bank, you don't bring Bikurim to Yerushalayim, because it's not considered the land flowing of milk and honey. Meaning to say, the spiritual level of out of the East Bank is not as good as the West Bank. It might be better than other non-Jewish nations in the world, but it doesn't compare in Kedusha. Also, think about it. You are far away from the Beis HaMikdash. Now, you could say, well, wait a minute. You know, you imagine the Beis HaMikdash is like Yerushalayim, is like right across where the Dead Sea is, right? If you're going across, right? So you figure, well, if I'm on the East Bank, I might even be closer than a tribe up north.
Right.
Yeah, but that river, the Jordan, is like one
it's
of these, you know, it's like...
Not at the bottom.
It's like, how often do you cross Wilson Avenue if you live in Thornhill, if you don't have to cross? It's like a geographic boundary. I mean, once you're on the other side of the Jordan, it's a schlep to cross the river, you know? You're distancing yourself from everybody. Where is the best schools? Where is the Sanhedrin? The Sanhedrin's in Yerushalayim. It's in the West Bank. Everything that's vibrantly Jewish is on the West Bank. So what are you doing being on the East Bank? Being on the East Bank means that you are willing to suffer spiritually. You're willing to suffer spiritually. And, you know, well, that's the sacrifice we got to make in order to make Parnas. It's the sacrifice we got to make to elevate the holy sparks of the sheep. Well, the heck with your sheep. In other words, a lot of times people feel, I have to do something that I find is meaningful. And sometimes we think, well, you know, it's meaningful. We're going to be the trailblazers. We'll bring spirituality to the East Bank. But you got to know, what's the cost? Is the cost your family? Then you got to know, the family still comes first. So, you know, and that's a very important thing, because sometimes we don't realize it. We might think we're having spiritual goals, but sometimes it's narcissistic goals that's cloaked in spirituality. If everybody's on the West Bank, well, it's already been taken care of, but who's going to be the trailblazers? Who are going to be the adventurers? We're the ones, we did something nobody else could do. There could be a little bit of arrogance in that you may not even realize. Often we want to do big mitzvahs for everybody, but guess what? You the people who volunteer for the whole community, but they never take care of their own kids. Because it's not special to take care of your kids, but being a volunteer for others is a special thing. So you understand, you could see where they had certain good intentions, but with all the good intentions, it's still not the right priority. And you always have to remember to keep the priorities in order. And sometimes the things that are the highest priorities are not the most glorified activities. And taking care of children may not be a glorified activity as much as being great ranchers. And imagine they make lots of money. They could probably give big donations to the Beis HaMikdash. Can imagine the other Jews are eking out a living on the West Bank, and these guys are huge, wealthy cattle ranchers, like in Texas, you know. And when we're going to come to Yerushalayim 3 days, we're going to give the biggest donations. Look what we're doing, making big tikkunim. What happened to the kids? And what did happen? What did happen? Midrashim tell us that when the tribes of Reuben and Gad came back after 14 years, the non-Jews were attacking their own children. And when they wanted to come to save their children, they couldn't tell the difference who were their children and who were the goyim. Because the children were dressing like the goyim. It was hard for them to know until they could figure out who the difference was. Meaning to say that those 14 years where they left them, it turned out not to be good. Those 14 years without their father figures was already a very big loss for them. A big loss. Now for those of us who are learning Maseches Makos, source 21, right? What is it? How many cities of refuge are on the east bank?
Three.
How many on the west bank?
Three.
What does the Gemara ask? Gemara says, I don't understand. There's 9.5 tribes on one side, 2.5 on the others. Doesn't seem equal. They have 3 and 3.
They sure is.
What's Gemara's answer?
More.
On the east bank, there were more murderers. So what does that mean? At the end of the day, the spiritual level was less.
Lower, that's it.
Was less, was not the same. Very interesting. Very interesting. Now, there was a little bit more than this. What Moshe really wanted, I'm going to get a little halachic here for a minute, just a little bit. You know, when you make an agreement, when Moshe made an agreement with them, I don't have time to go through it all over here, but if you look at sources, I'm just going to tell you which ones to look at later, 15, 16, 17. When Moshe made the binding agreement, he says, if you will go and lead us into battle and lead the troops, then you can go and get the land you want. And then he said, that would be enough. No. And if you don't go ahead, then you don't get the land. That's called, and we call it Tnai Kaful, a double-sided condition. You say the positive and the negative. And for this, Gemara Kedushin says, if you make a conditional sale on a condition, you have to say both sides of it. If you only say one side, it doesn't work. Even if you make a kinyan, let's say I write a document. If you go and do this thing, then I will sell you this property. And you write it and everything. Not valid. You got to write the other side also. And if you don't do it, then you won't get it. Then it's valid. Called Tnai Kaful. Double side. Now the Rambam says, but that's only... And some say because if you don't say the other side, then maybe the guy didn't really mean it. Lots of people say things, but they don't really mean it. You got to say both ends so we know that you're not exaggerating. You really mean it. The Rambam says in Source 17, that's only with something that's going to happen in a long time from now. Oh, if you'll do this down the road, then down the road I'll sell it to you. Well, then you need a double thing to make sure it's going to happen. But if it's right away... Like his mom is this minute. If you do this right now, I'll give you the land right now. They don't have to do one side. They don't have to do double sided. Because then they don't, I'm not so exaggerating, because it's happening very soon. Interesting. If you look carefully, when Moshe told them about the double sided agreement, if you look in Source 18, so Moshe says, where is this? No, Moshe said before, Moshe gave him the double sided agreement. That's what he said in 15. In 15, Moshe said both sides of the deal. I don't have time to read it inside. But he said both sides of the deal. But in 19, in 18, when they show their agreement, what do they say? They say, Nachnu navar chalotzim lifnei Hashem, Eretz Kanan, v'itanu achuzas nachos erer. We will cross, and they didn't say the other side. And if we don't, they didn't say it. Because they said v'itanu, because we want the land now. So Moshe really wanted to say to them is, I want to make a double-sided agreement so that you'll be the owners of the land later. That's what you need a double-sided agreement for. They said, we don't need a double-sided agreement. We want the land now. So they made it a one-sided agreement. Again, it showed you how quickly they wanted the land immediately. They wanted to seal the deal now. They want to be legal owners of it now. And that showed their tremendous excitement for this. A little bit too much, wrong priorities. Okay, now that I've made that idea very clear, I think it's very clear.
Yeah.
So now let's go back and now we understand how everything makes so much sense over here. We asked three original questions. Why did Moshe pick specific events and not others in the rebuke? Number two, why did it say Oz Yavdil? Then Moshe separated the Eruv Miklat. What was the connection in that? And why did it say the second time in source 4, again, this is the Torah that Moshe spoke before the Jewish people? He already was speaking to the Jewish people. So now the answer becomes very clear. The answer is that Moshe was the whole time focused in rebuking only Reuven and Gad. And therefore, he's only mentioning events that is giving the message to Reuven and Gad more so than anybody else. All the other things are not as critical as these ones that he's mentioning to them. So let's go again over the six in the beginning. You'll see how this is, how it's so special for them. First Sivri was, what did Hashem say? The first one, the first few psukim, it says, Hashem says, look, I've given this land, go and conquer the land. You hear? That's what Hashem wanted, go and conquer the land. Second one, appoint the judges. Well, what was the problem with the judges? They were happy to take judges and not Moshe. That was a criticism on all the Jews. But they were happy with second best. So he's trying to say, no, and living on the East Bank is not second best. Mm-hmm. But he didn't say it straight. He gave an example of, you could have Moshe or the other judges. The best or second best? Oh, second best is okay. So that already, okay, it applied to all the Jews too, but specifically with them. Okay. So now, and that's exactly the same thing. You want to go on the east side of the Jordan River. Isn't that second best? What's the next thing? Sin of the spies. Well, that's easy. That's Moshe himself mentioned the sin of the spies when he is critical of them. You're doing the same thing the sins did. They did. Next, circling around Edom, Moab, and Ammon, and where Hashem says, you can't have this land. Well, why does he have to tell the Jews they can't have this land? They're all going to be on the West Bank anyway. Sichon and Og's on the East Bank. The answer is, because Reuven and Gad want to be on the East Bank. So you might want to even have more land on the East Bank. That's why he's telling you can't have any on the East Bank over there. Then obviously he's going to repeat the next story, the condition with the tribes of Gad and Reuven. He has to repeat that. So everything is applying to them. Now let's move on to number 7. Moshe's prayer to enter the land of Israel. What's the message over there? He says, listen, I'm on the East Bank. God says I have to stay in the East Bank. You know how badly I wanted to go to the West Bank? After God told me I can't go, I prayed 515 prayers. Do you know how important it is to be on the West Bank and not on the East Bank that I would pray so much? Even if God told me I couldn't go, I still prayed 515 times. Don't you see that I didn't want to settle for second best. Why should you be settling for second best? And then the next thing, he said, you have to be a long discussion to not fall into idolatry. He's, because the land of Israel is the land that Hashem seeks, not outside the land of Israel. You know how much more in danger to idolatry you'll be out alone on the East Bank than on the West Bank with all the Jews in Yerushalayim to be able to have closer access to the Beis HaMikdash? Okay. Now, after all that, he expects, after the rabbi gives the drush in the shul, that everybody should give more tzedakah, and he's looking all the time at that guy who ain't giving tzedakah. He's waiting after the drush, and the man say, Rabbi, you know, you're right, I should give a little more tzedakah. He says, no, you really told them off good, Rabbi. I hope they listen to you. So at this point, Moshe was trying his best to hear the B'nai God and Reuven say, okay, you know, now that
we changed the decision.
But we changed our mind.
But
they
never.
You see, Moshe couldn't force them. They wanted it so badly, he couldn't stop them to a certain degree. He couldn't stop them. Okay, you're willing to that? Okay, but make sure you go first and all this. But, you know, sometimes you can't just say no. But he figured if I could give enough tochacha, they're going to understand on their own. That's why Moshe never separated the cities right away. We ask, why didn't he separate it right away? He likes to do mitzvahs right away. That's he was hoping against hope that he wouldn't ever have to separate them.
That all would have gone there. And they
he was hoping that they, you know, in the heat of the moment, the end of in Matos, they wanted it and they're excited about it. And Moshe says, "Well, no, you're going to have to lead the troops into battle." Could be even thought they may not be willing to do that. They would just go along. But they know we're going to lead and this and that, all that. So now Moshe says, "Okay, going to have it." But you think Moshe to let it go? He said, "Don't worry, I'll get one last chance before I go, before I die." When I'm rebuking him, I'm going to really give him a good rebuke. Maybe they're going to hear the rebuke then. So he's waiting. And after he finished all that, nothing. So then, Oz Yavdil. Then Moshe separated the three cities. Because now I don't have a choice. I have to separate the three cities for them. Because they are going to stay over there. And then the next pasuk after that, the last topic, he says, "Vizos Hatar Shemoshe Lifnei Bnei Yisrael." This message is for the entire Jewish people completely. In other words, very interesting. In the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, maybe that's why it also says, "Elav Asher Dibra Moshe El." Look what it says. It says Kol Yisrael. It doesn't say Kol Bnei Yisrael. Look at the first source.
Yeah, Kol Yisrael.
Kol Yisrael. Yeah, it was not Kol Yisrael, but it really was to God and Reuven. But he couched it to Kol Yisrael. And that's what Rashi said, as I told you before, in source 6, in 6, when he says, "I told you, because I've been talking to you the whole time, really." And now that they didn't agree, and they just weren't interested, so that Moshe gave up. Oz! Then he separated the cities. Okay, now as we're finished. Now let's go on to the next topic of business. So the next topic of business, then we can definitely say that what? Zos HaTorah Asher Sa Moshe Lifnei Bnei Yisrael. Now he's talking to the entire Jewish people. And the total focus to now there's rebuke he has to give them all equally. So you see what's happening. In the beginning, it really was he wanted to settle one thing, get Reuven and God aligned with the Jews. Once I get them aligned with the Jews, then I'll save my rebuke for everybody. But I got to get them in line. But it just didn't go. Once he realized it didn't go. But then he separates them. And then ultimately, then he starts again. Now he's going to give the word to everybody else. So this is really incredible how these parshios are all around before and after Tisha B'Av. Because that's really where the issues are, where the Jews make the biggest mistakes, and when they think we're doing the greatest will of Hashem and we're amazing and this and that, and we don't remember that we don't make the ikar and the tofel. And that's why I named the class, "Don't Settle for Second Best in Your Priorities." And Moshe was trying to get them to see the message, to not settle for second best. Worrying about your cattle, that's a nice thing. But you got to realize, what is the best is to worry about your kids. That's the most important thing. And therefore, it's usually also, we read this as we now are, as they say, in the heat of the summer, as it were. And what tends to happen in the heat of the summer is that people seem to leave the protective environments of a shul, a Jewish community, and they seem to, you know, in summer to compromise a bit on their Yiddishkeit sometimes. And they go away and they go to places that are not exactly conducive to Jewish growth. So you got to realize, and you know, of course, you know, you got to rest, and that's a priority too. But you got to realize that it can't compromise on the bigger priorities of being the best Jew that you can be. So, therefore, as you see how Dvarim just fits, and in all the parshas before, Pinchas, Matos, Maaseh, all those talking about these same topics over here. And again, it's a very difficult mistake to spot. Because after all, you've got a good justification. Well, this is a priority too. This is also an important thing in life. And as much as you really think it is the best thing, and maybe it's second best, but when you settle for second best sometimes, you end up with nothing. So Hashem should help us to have that clear vision to really not settle for anything than the best. Okay.